Hello and welcome to the Soccer Speakeasy. Today is Wednesday, the 28th of July, 2021. We did have news today, as Jacob confirmed this morning. Jacob Myers, our fine crew beat writer. The Columbus Stadium, the LDC, as it's known in the budding vernacular, I guess.
I've seen that. I've seen the dot, which, of course, we have like our own dot internally with our management system. But LDC, fine. Some people are saying that. Go ahead, Mike.
It's a lower.com field, and it will host a World Cup qualifier, at least one, the United States versus Costa Rica. That's on October 13th, Jacob. The bigger news, or at least an ancillary piece of news that is probably bigger, is the Mexico game has been awarded to Cincinnati. So that'll kick off the first half of World Cup qualifying in the fall. That's USA-Mexico. At the West End Stadium. What do they call that, Jacob?
TQL.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like LDC, yeah. TQL. And what's
Q2?
The, what's the
Queso 2, as you like to say?
Houston Stadium's name. There's another
BBVA.
There's a TDL or something down there, too. Anyway, we're making
happened
too
all
much
the old school stuff. Names, like the well, Jake.
You can't make any money off that. So Cincinnati hosting U.S. Mexico November 12th, then Columbus hosting U.S. Costa Rica on the 13th, at El Salvador on September 2, USA Canada at Nashville September 5, at Honduras September 8, October 7th versus Jamaica, at the Q2 in Austin, Texas, October 10th at Panama, October 13th versus Costa Rica in Columbus, November 11th versus Mexico in Cincinnati. So I know I said that kicked it off, but that isn't it. So that'll end, those two games end the first half of qualifying later this year, October 13th in Columbus against Costa Rica, November 11th in Cincinnati against Mexico. And then on the back end, there are games to be announced. So on the back end of qualifying, 4, 5, 6, another 7 games. The home dates are January 27th versus El Salvador, February 2nd versus Honduras, and March 27th against Panama. Those are all U.S. home games to be announced. Jacob, in your reporting this morning, what did you discover?
Yeah, just that they're, you know, having the game here. I've yet to, and when it's formally announced, I've been trying to approach the club to just kind of understand how this whole process works. I don't know if you know it, Mike, if just the federation approaches different clubs and said, hey, we're interested in you hosting this game, or there's some, I would think there's some type of bidding process, and then you kind of talk about how much a club keeps versus the federation. What do you know how that kind of shakes out?
Yeah, since the since MLS in the form of Don Garber is in charge of some, which is the marketing arm of the United States Soccer Federation. Basically, Don Garber does whatever he wants. It's kind of like Qatar being in the CONCACAF Gold Cup. Kyle Robertson has some comments here. Kyle Robertson joins us today. We're back in the studio with our producer, Patrick Flaherty, the Podfather, at the Podfather 2. It's good to be here, although Patrick broke the air conditioning at some point. So
hey, at least it works.
It's a little steamy in here.
At least we're in.
Kyle, any thoughts?
I mean, I think once USA lost to Mexico here in Columbus in the last cycle, I think majority of us knew that it wasn't going to ever come back. You know, if they won and kept it, you know, the dose of zero, I think you kind of had to keep it going. But the other thing is business. The Cincinnati Stadium's a lot bigger, right? By how much? By 4,000 or 5,000?
6,000.
6,000. Yeah. You know, it's more money.
Yeah. That's what I was wondering, and hopefully I get answers to this. And I believe Cincinnati is writing essentially why they were awarded over Columbus. So I'm curious to read that when that's out. But maybe it is as simple as 26,000 is greater than 20,000. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's something to do with, like you said, Mexico won last time here. That's all to say this was a really important game given U.S. missing out on the last World Cup, new stadium here, the team being safe. It just feels like, although I do believe probably at some point there'll be U.S.-Mexico games in Columbus again, this one would have taken on a whole life of its own.
Oh, indeed. I wouldn't dissuade anyone from thinking conspiratorially about Don Garber just screwing Columbus and giving it to Cincinnati.
Never slowed down Crew fans.
That makes sense to me. You know, it sort of fits as well.
Back in the day when they first got, you know, the game, you know, here in Columbus, there wasn't that many state-of-the-art stadiums. Now, you know what, there's 3 or 4 that are...
Well, there's more than
you
that.
Know, yeah, but
there was one that, you know, and there's a whole bunch of soccer stadiums.
But I mean, now. What, Minnesota's you know, Minnesota.
And they were in the running for this game.
Yeah.
Well, the original idea, and it worked.
But you want to keep it north.
Well, the original idea was that Mexican fans pack every other football stadium on the coasts or in the south. Yeah. So if you're going to play in Texas or California or Florida or New York, those are pro-Mexican crowds.
Yeah, those are away games.
Yeah, the idea was to control the tickets and give the U.S. a home field advantage, which is what happened. Now the U.S. probably has home field advantage on any number of MLS stadiums across the league. So yeah, there's that to it too. That dovetails nicely with the Gold Cup here, Kyle, because we may be looking at another collision of the U.S. and Mexico in the finals of the Gold Cup. We'll see what happens over the next couple of days. Thursday, tomorrow, the 29th at the Q2 Stadium in Austin. Giassi Zardes and the U.S. team plays Qatar in one semifinal at 7:30. And then in the other semifinal, it's Canada and Liam Fraser against Mexico. That's also tomorrow night. That's in Houston at whatever they call their stadium. That's at 9. So 7:30 for U.S. Qatar, 9 o'clock for Mexico against Canada. Those games are on FS1, Univision, and JUDN. I tried to look up where they'd be aired in Qatar, but I couldn't find the network. We understand why Qatar is playing in the CONCACAF Gold Cup.
How much money do you think they wrote to United States?
Well, that's part of it. We won't ever know how much money because of the bribery that goes on, especially in CONCACAF.
Isn't there stories about how they've like grown their pool of players where they've brought in families from Africa like 10 years ago once they got the bid? I mean, like millions of dollars to bring in families.
Should ask crew scouting director Neil McGinnis. He worked with over in Qatar. Yeah.
Well, wow. it worked.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, in the last Asian Cup, they beat Japan in the final rather convincingly. And Japan shouldn't be losing to Qatar, although you have to wonder about the referees.
Is it Qatar or Qatar? I'm
going to say Qatar this time. They're riding an unbeaten streak that dates to 2017. And again, they are the defending champions of, what's the name of that tournament? The Asian Cup. They're hosting, obviously, the World Cup next year. They were looking for games. They were invited by CONCACAF, which had their hands open. Are their arms open or both?
Money bag, please.
And here they are in the semifinals against the United States. Jacob, this is not a pushover side, especially given that Greg Berhalter's team has looked really good at times and kind of average at times. And he doesn't have his A team with him at present. A lot of MLS guys down there. Did you see any of the Jamaican game? And if so, what was your take?
I kind of got the back half of that Jamaica game and what I read and even the probably 20-30 minutes I watched was a very, I guess, just kind of dull. Ground and pound. Yeah, very dull. But they found a way to win as they should have. They were the superior squad. Look, they have to play better, especially if they want to beat Mexico. That's not a full top Mexican squad either, but
it's a lot better than the United States, though.
They've been playing well.
And I just struggled to kind of get a read on the Gold Cup, especially coming off of the Nations League and that awesome final against Mexico. It's like, how much should U.S. men's national team fans really care about this tournament? But you still have a chance to hoist a trophy at the end. So, yes, I believe they definitely have to play better moving forward here. Even against Canada, they did not look good against Canada either.
I thought Canada looked good.
They had the better of that match.
Yeah, and I'm not denigrating the United States in that Canada's
got so a much squad.
It's like Canada was pretty good. I mean,
Tejan Buchanan.
Crew fans know what Larea can do and so forth. Canada was hyped to play that game, too. That was another factor. Go ahead, Kyle.
No, I was just going to say, Zardes, man, when he came in the second half for United States, I think things really started to change, and he almost got the header kind of on that on the only goal. But I think it's a big opportunity for a lot of the guys that are second team, first team kind of. You're going to need a larger pool of players here because I think the United States have three games in 6 days
in the World Cup?
In the qualifying.
And there was a reporting that it's expected that Berhalter, and I'm assuming a lot of these clubs, as Mike detailed the schedule there, it's those first two windows. Yeah. So you had three games. Well, guys traveling from Europe to go to Honduras or wherever in God's name it is.
El Salvador.
They're going to have a bigger squad and call guys in here. So, yes, it'll be a bigger squad than normal.
I mean, I think so far, I think Turner's done really well in goal. You know, I think he's going to be one of your backups. Obviously, Stefan is your go-to guy. And I think the defense has been playing really good. I mean, the one guy I like is James Sands. And Miles Robinson's been doing pretty good, too. But, I mean, other than that, I mean, him scoring a lot of goals. I don't know. I think they can get by, but the Mexican game could be interesting. I think they might be a little in over their head.
A blood battle?
Yeah.
Semifinals Thursday night, tomorrow night, and then the final is Sunday at 8:30. And that's in Vegas.
They are putting up some goals.
They are.
They have the lead assist guy and the lead goal.
The lead goal guy is Almoez Ali with 4 goals, and they've outscored their opponents 12-4 in the tournament. Their immigration policies, I should say, have been working well. Yes, interesting. And as the Gold Cup has gone along here, Jacob, a lot of returns as teams are eliminated, returns to the crew lineup to some good effect at this point. They're still in a spot where they're handling a lot of games on short rest. They are, however, on a semi-roll, despite the fact that they've been anemic offensively, but a very good win at Atlanta Saturday, 1-0. They hung on, but a road win's a road win for a team that hasn't played terrifically well on the road.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, especially considering they're at the back end of that 3-8. Atlanta was too, so I don't love to use that kind of as a reason, but when that happens and then you change your formation, I think they really executed the game plan exactly how they wanted to set it up. They had a few great chances in the first half. Hurtado has to finish that. Marlon Harrison, great look as well. I don't expect him to finish that every time, but they should have been up 1-0.
He's been playing really well the last
few. He's been awesome. Yeah. Quietly, probably their best offseason signing so far. Aloy Room has been playing like the top goalkeeper in MLS lately.
Oh, he was terrific.
Yep. Again, his one save against Nashville kept him in the game. Yeah. New York City, he basically won that game for them. He's not the sole reason, but one of the top reasons they've won 7 of the last 9 available points. And Jonathan Mensah gets the header there. I thought Molino could have finished it well. That was just very well executed. And then the defense looked extremely confident defending in their own box. Just a well-executed game.
Kyle, some props to Coach Caleb Porter here. Came out with a new look, and he seems to have.
Four-four-two is kind of a.
Well, I know, why are you busting me here? Just listen for a second, okay? But he went from his normal 4-2-3-1 into a 4-4-2. That got Bradley Wright, Phillips, and Hurtado up top. It pushed Nagby and Hairston back, and it gave the guys on the outside room the counter. And he did that for the first half, and as Jacob indicated, it worked very well, and then came back with his standard formation in the second half, and they hung on. We used to gently chide Greg Berhalter for his lack of flexibility at times when it came to formations and how he substituted.
Completely changed.
We're seeing a lot of flexibility from Caleb Porter, are we not?
Yeah, I mean, I think it also has to do with what Jacob said earlier. Is like they needed a change. If you're going to be down, the last few games they haven't been scoring. Their guys aren't. They're going to be there. So, I don't think Bradley Wright, Phillips, and Hurtado and Barry are capable of being the lone guy up front.
I like Barry, by the way.
No, I do, but I don't think that the way that
the crew's
playing.
No, someone we never talk about. I really like Barry. Yeah. I was like, all right, Barry's in now.
But But even on that goal chance, I mean, Bradley Wright Phillips dropped down, made a nice play. You know,
he made two really nice plays to get the counter out and going.
But I don't think that any of the three of them are capable of just being the lone guy up front at the moment. The way that I think the quality of the players are on the outside and kind of behind.
It has more to do with Lucas not starting the game. And I wrote it takeaways for people who hadn't noticed, but Caleb Porter said this, and he's exactly right. He doesn't like Lucas out wide, especially when you have a guy like Alex Matan or even Pedro at left back who plays wide, can come into the middle. It doesn't make sense to have two, three players at the same time come on the field. But you saw when Lucas went in there, they went back to the 4-2-3-1. And I thought Alex Matan and Kevin Molino starting in that first half had their best games yet, especially defensively. So, yeah, I do think you see the flexibility there when Lucas isn't starting, and it was smart not to start him because there's no sense in risking any bit of injury with him right now, not even halfway into the season. They made the adjustment they had to, and it worked out well.
But, I mean, I think the 4-4-2, they looked more comfortable defending. I thought they stayed a little bit more together, and just the compact look of it. And if you'd have gotten that early goal, you know, things would have been a lot different. And I think that's what they were going for. Like you said, I think that was the hope.
The exact chance you would draw up before the game. Right. You just got to put it away. As simple as that. And to your point, Mike, Miguel Berry, he gets in there, has a chance like Hurtado does, but he creates his own chance there, takes a guy one-on-one and almost wins the game. I think he's looked very good when he's been in.
He's an SUV, that guy. I won't call him a truck, but
he needs games though.
The game prior, they played really well in a draw with Nashville. Again, Nashville can draw just about anyone, including in Brazil at this point, it seems. That was a wonderful weekday game.
It was
in the LDC or whatever Kyle's calling it.
I like it. LDC.
It was a great game to watch. And for all the chances they had, there was one of them where you go, oh, Molino, that's why you're paid. That one's got to go in there, you know. But they played a terrific game. They just didn't finish, which is kind of the story of their season, Jacob.
It was exactly what it looked like last year against Nashville in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Especially, I thought Nashville was better for most of that game in the playoffs, but this game, certainly the crew was way better coming down the stretch. You really felt like they were going to score and win the game at the end. That's a very good team in Nashville who I expect to, if not get a home playoff game, even maybe contend for a top three spot in the East. They look very, very good right now, and they just added a guy from Monterey. So when he gets fully rolling, who knows what they're going to look like. But yeah, that's a quality team.
And then Mensa scores against
the old captain,
which, you know, good for him. We've been talking about essentially their differential. They are +4. They have the second fewest goals in the East, goals for 16 in 15 games. But they're tied with Seattle for the fewest goals allowed in the league with 12.
If you're not scoring goals, you better keep them out of the net.
So arguably, this is the best defensive team in the league with arguably the best keeper in the league. So that's something to build on going forward. They played 15. They're going to play 34. And there's
really say he's the best keeper?
Oh, I would.
I said arguably.
Arguably, for sure. I thought he was. I mean, he finished top three last year in goaltender voting.
He has his moments, but
honestly, with the defense,
the defense is better than the goalie. But
I disagree this year. Okay, they have not been as dominant this year. Ayler Room has definitely helped them get some points in the stretch.
I would tend to agree with that. He's been playing very well over the last month during the.
No, I'm not saying that. I just don't think he's.
I don't think he sucks.
I'm just saying.
Score on him as all.
Of course.
He's a top five keeper in the league, baby.
I'll give you top five, but I mean, I just don't think he's.
There's a guy playing in Gold Cup right now. It's pretty good.
No
question about that. I hear what you're saying, Kyle. But 16 goals allowed in 15 games is a team thing. You have to point it out because that is a building block for this team as they look forward to more than half the season left.
And on that note, too, now they're getting guys back. Luis Diaz just came back after Costa Rica's out.
Right.
I saw a change in kind of the rhetoric from Caleb Porter yesterday when we talked to him. I think now that he knows he has basically his entire group back, Jossie's the only one back, he's looking at this, okay, we're halfway into the season. Now's time that Kevin Molino is fully fit, too. That's a huge part of this.
They're not even halfway.
Yeah. A couple games.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean,
and they have a lot of more, the home game stretch,
too. It's a good way to look at it. They could be in worse shape.
Yeah, totally. But this is the time to get it rolling.
Yeah.
To their credit, they're not going backwards right now.
But they have lost. They have left some points, Cincinnati, Austin,
Sure. At the same time, they've lost 1-10. Right. So, yeah, I think they're in the in-between there. Yep.
Going back to Philly on the 23rd, that was at Philly, the defending supporters, shield holders.
Played well that game, most of
A 1-0 loss. They played well. And since they're 2-0-4, and they've won two of their last three, one of them on the road. So things are looking up. Let's look ahead just a little bit as we come down the home stretch here, gentlemen. Friday, that's 2 days from now, as we record again on Wednesday, the 28th. It's around 2:30 right now. But Friday the 30th at New York City FC, that's in the Yankee Stadium, a 7:30 p.m. game. Jacob, what can you heading into this one? Can you just a thumbnail what we have for an injury situation, players available, what you think the lineup would look like, and what Caleb Porter might do with his players?
Yeah, I think the injury situation second straight week now, which has not been the theme, is going to look pretty much the same. Artur, Aiden Morris, Josh Williams, Vito Wormhorn, Milton Valenzuela are going to be out. Josh might be mentioned as questionable, but Caleb Porter said that he would hopefully start to train at the end of this week and Vito next week. So that's moving in the right direction. Another guy who's playing well is Abubakar Keita in place there at center back. He's looked very well. So I expect him to start with Mensah.
And you mentioned that, and we should say in light of what we just talked about, that given their injuries and their Gold Cup call-ups, they've held the line, as it were.
I'd say even more so. Yeah. I mean, 9 points. I thought going 500, 2-2-2, 8 points would have been really good for this month. They got 9 points right now.
Yeah, if not for Eli Room, they might be in first place. I'm just kidding, Kyle. Speaking of the standings, and before we get to your lineups, let me just interject here. We usually gloss over the standings, so I'll do it here. Revolution up top with 33 points, Nashville 26, 3 Orlando with 25, 4 Philadelphia with 24. They're a tiebreaker over the Crew with 24 in 15 games. Crew has a game in hand on Philadelphia and New England at this point. Sixth place, New York City FC, so that adds a little spice to the upcoming game. Seventh place, Montreal with 22 points. And then below the bar, DC, Red Bulls, Atlanta, Toronto, Cincy, Chicago, and Miami. So Crew, the Crew moved up in their last few games. They were kind of, they snuck up into third for a few minutes there. They're basically tied for fourth, but they have a game in hand. So in good shape. This is another interesting game coming up against New York City FC. For standings reasons, if nothing else, one of those tricky games, Kyle, on that ersatz field in the house that George Steinbrenner's sons built.
Yeah, I mean, I think the number one thing is, will Zellerón get another free kick goal, right?
Set the record?
Yeah, right? I mean, and get a third win against them. The way I look at this game is, to me, it's just, it's a smaller field, so how you would like to use kind of Luis Diaz now back in the lineup, it's harder to get with. But you're on the road against a team you're right up against in the standings. Porter even admitted that two games they won against the run, which is accurate. Just freaking go for it. I expect Pedro Santos to start at left back instead of Waylon, where I think Waylon doesn't get enough ahead. Yeah. So like you can be more pinned back against a really good attacking team. I don't think they want to do that on the road. So maybe get the ball more in the attacking third, keep it up there. So Pedro Santos on the left, awful to start again on the right. Mensah and Keita, then Room and goal. Nagby and Marlon Hairston has been playing awesome. Keep playing him. And then I think wingers, you go Kevin Molino on the left, Diaz on the right, and then Lucas and probably Bradley Wright Phillips, who I would assume is good enough to start now.
Now, what is there's a team record for free kick goals that is tied right now?
Believe so.
That's Robert Warzyha.
I'm trying to think. In a single season.
Yeah. And I think
I thought Pipa had it with four.
Okay.
In a single season.
Okay.
which Lucas has four currently.
I think so. And I think the league record is Giovinco 6, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah. Anyway.
But it doesn't even have a record with everyone, most against one team, though.
Jacob's going to Google it right now. Interesting. What are they going to do with the formation Jacob just talked about, Kyle?
Well, I think you run your standard one. You got majority of the people back. You're going to run, unless someone's hurt that we don't know about. You ran what you ran in the second half against Atlanta. Unless there's,
I think that's right.
Different. What the
4-2-3-1?
Oh yeah. But I'm saying like unless they have a different game plan that we don't know about. But if you do see them doing the 4-4-2, then
to me it's just Lucas is healthy. Right, yeah. He'll probably start. Therefore, you play your 4-2-3-1. Yeah, he's at four, which is tied.
Right.
Tied with Pieper right now.
Okay. And I think,
but doesn't he have the record for most against one team in one?
Well, geez, now you're getting weird. But I think
I need like a 15-minute pause to look up all this stuff.
Higuain with the team record four, now tied with Lucas Zelarayán, who I think after Giovinco and Beckham might be.
Yeah.
Well, he's one of the top three over the ball on a free kick that MLS has seen. I mean, he's shown that in a very brief period of time, starting in the bubble. Woo. Anyway, after Friday at New York City FC, then Wednesday, August 4th, home versus Chicago. Gentlemen, I've gone through my agenda here as best I could. Do you have anything to add before we sign off?
Just correcting the record. He has surpassed Federico Higuain for free kick goals in one season. Lucas has four. Pipa had three in one season.
Mm.
I thought Warziha figured into this, maybe for career.
I always felt like Robert just, he blasted the ball where Zelarayán kind of has more of a...
The Polish rifle.
Yeah. So,
well,
I still a better name, though.
Now, it's tricky to be historical about this because according to the Elias Sports Bureau, from what I've looked up, is free kicks weren't always tracked in MLS. It was something like 2002 they started, it's something like that. So there's a hole in the history, but the season record, Sebastian Giovinco with six. The Cruz season record was held by Pipa with three, since surpassed by Zelarayán with his fourth. And Warziha had six in his Crew career, and that is the standard for the black and gold. So there's that. And again, I just throw it right back to you guys. Anything else to add before Patrick turns the lights out and hopefully the air conditioner on in here?
No, just turn that air conditioner on.
All right, that's all we got here. For Patrick Flaherty, Kyle Robertson, and Jacob Myers, I'm Mike Arias. Thanks for joining us. Check out all of Jacob's stuff, all of Kyle's wonderful photo galleries at dispatch.com. That's it for this week. We'll talk to you again soon. Patrick, kick us out of here.